Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nielsen, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast. Welcome to Utopia.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It is a Wednesday mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. My name is Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., weekdays, Monday through Friday. Co-host Seth and I are of Texans Countdown as well, myself and Clint Sterner on Texans postgame. I suppose we should mention that since we're back to weeks with games. We got a game coming up on Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. We'll give a hardcore preview of that on Friday morning this week. In the meantime, we're kind of returning from the bye week here. I'm back from my trip to Pittsburgh, which was great. If for those who are unfamiliar, my wife Amy and I go to a different NFL stadium every year for the Texans bye week. And this year we chose Pittsburgh. When there were games in Miami and LA and warm weather places, we said, no. We're going to Pittsburgh for Pittsburgh and Cleveland. And let me give you just quick thoughts on that trip. It was yet another trip. We've done four of these now, my wife and I have. We've done Green Bay, Kansas City, Tampa, and Pittsburgh. And in three of those four, Green Bay, Kansas City, and Pittsburgh, despite the fact that the Texans are once again a good football team, not a great football team, but a good football team, and the fans are re-engaged and season ticket sales are good and everything else, it still feels like a different universe at a place like Pittsburgh and Green Bay and Kansas City, where everybody's in their seats half hour before the game. When I tell you there were less than 100 Browns fans that I saw at that game, considering it's a 70,000 seat stadium or whatever the hell Acrisure Stadium is, I'm not lying. Like, there were hardly any Browns fans there. And I think I don't think it's indicative of Browns fans not wanting to travel to Pittsburgh for the game. Now, granted, the Browns are having a shitty season. They're a bad football team. They're probably not very easy to root for, given some of the decisions that they've made and who their quarterback is. Not Jameis, the other guy. So wanting to get on the road and travel multiple hours in December in cold weather to go watch the Browns play the Steelers, I could see where it's not that enticing to Cleveland fans, but I would think it would be enticing to a couple thousand Cleveland fans, maybe. It was crazy. And so I think that's indicative of the Steelers are just there. That's a team whose fans do not sell their tickets. They obviously you can get tickets to Steeler games, but it costs a pretty penny to go. I can tell you that. So there were no Browns fans there, and I'm doing that to draw a comparison. This is a Texans podcast, obviously. The Texans aren't there yet. All they need to do is obviously win six Super Bowls and hire head coaches that stay for 20 or 25 years at a time, and poof, bingo. Fans in seats at the beginning of game. It was amazing. It was an amazing atmosphere. If you are an NFL fan that likes to travel to other stadiums, I'm trying to think of when the next time the Texans would be playing the Steelers. It could be next season if both of them win their division this year. I don't think they cross over with the AFC North last year. Next year's crossover is with the AFC West. But if the Steelers and the Texans both win their division, which both are two games up in their respective divisions now, they will play each other next year. I'm just trying to think of where that game would be. I don't have the wherewithal to bore you people with me trying to remember what the schedule looked like back in, I guess it would be 2022 would be the season that would have mirrored. That was the Lovie Smith season. So I'm trying to think who they played. Oh, well, they played Cleveland at home that year. That was the Deshaun return game. So this game will be at Pittsburgh. Yes, go next year. Sorry I had to workshop that in a podcast form, but I'm 95% certain that if the Texans and Steelers both win their division, the Texans will play at Pittsburgh next year. Go. It's a cool city. It's a good vibe. It's a great sports town. Lots of good food. I would say this. It is kind of hard downtown to find places at night just to go get beer or wine or whatever supplies to bring back to your Airbnb or your hotel room. That is one thing. Their downtown shuts down somewhat early, but you can find plenty of places to go out and drink there at the establishment. But we had a great time. Highly recommend. And now we're back from the bye week and the Texans are back. And as I am speaking right now, they are at practice. The Texans are. And D'Amico Ryans and CJ Stroud will talk to the media later on today. I think the big news coming out of the bye week for the Texans is the one, this is the first game without Azeez Alshire. First of three games without Azeez. I heard a cut from Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show. We played it on Payne and Pendergast that really hit home just what the Texans are going to be missing here without Azeez. Rodgers was very complimentary of Azeez Alshire as a player. Doesn't think he's a dirty player. Thinks he's a thumper, which means he hits hard, but he hits clean most of the time. But Aaron Rodgers was saying that as a quarterback, you got to know where zero is. Zero being Azeez Alshire. Because you don't want to take big hits like Trevor Lawrence had to take. So that's something the Texans are going to be missing. And these are teams, and I'm not just talking about quarterbacks with Tua and Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, but these are two teams that love to a couple of them love to run the football, but they love to work the middle of the field with the tight ends, with the crossing routes and things like that. The middle part of the field for the Texans, where Azeez Alshire would normally patrol, that kill zone that D'Amico likes to call, it became a lot less killy with Azeez Alshire out. So life after Azeez Alshire, I think, is a big theme for the game against the Dolphins this weekend. But you are getting Christian Harris back. Christian Harris, well, you should be. He's back at practice. I am hopeful that he plays in the game. I would guess that if the Texans handle him the same way they've handled other injured players who've come back, he's not going to have a full workload coming back. He won't have a full complement of snap counts. Nico Collins only played 30 snaps his first game back. Will Anderson had a reduced workload his first game back. Christian Harris hasn't played any football this year, period. He's practiced this week, and he practiced a teensy tiny bit in training camp. And when I say teensy tiny, I'm talking like half of one practice. So he's reportedly in very good shape. He's moving great. The athleticism's not a problem, but he's not calloused up to play football at all right now. So getting him back will help. A lot of pressure on Neville Hewitt and Henry Toa, probably Jake Hansen as well, to do what they've already had to do this year, which is replace Azeez Alshire. Those guys, as backups go, they've played pretty well in Alshire's absence. Kenyon Green coming back, bit of a surprise. Did not know he was designated for return, but he is back. And like Christian Harris, he's been activated for practice, but not activated to the 53-man roster yet. That gets very interesting to see exactly how Kenyon Green gets treated. Keep in mind, when he went out, he didn't go out because he was benched. He went out because he was injured. He was playing when he got knocked out. Now, he was well on his way to getting benched, I think. But it hasn't been perfect, with Juice Scruggs at left guard and Jared Patterson at center. I think that's an understatement. Juice Scruggs played better in the last game against Jacksonville, but what exactly is happening here? You know, is Kenyon Green going to be a backup to Juice Scruggs? Does Jared Patterson keep the center position? Do they go back to the original starting five at the beginning of the year where Kenyon was at left guard and Juice Scruggs was at center? I don't know. I haven't checked Twitter to see if any videos popped up yet of who's, quote, running with the ones. But Kenyon Green back as well. That one doesn't have me as excited as Christian Harris. But if Kenyon Green proves me wrong, I'm here for that. I think the big wild card this week would be Jalen Petrie. And by now, there probably is news as to whether or not Petrie was at practice today. So I apologize that I don't have that. But I think just in general, getting Petrie back sometime soon would be great. The fact that he's not on IR, I think, is a positive development for the Texans. If he were truly unplayable, or the pectoral muscle was, you know, ready to rip off the bone or needed surgery, he would have been on IR already. So that Petrie is still on the 53-man roster, I think, is a good thing. So with that said, a reminder to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Also a reminder that you can email the podcast, houmailbag@gmail.com. We do the podcast. I usually record on Tuesdays. This week it was Wednesdays, just things got a little busy. But the mailbag is now dropping on Wednesdays. So send in your questions, houmailbag@gmail.com. best to send him in after the game on Monday, or on Sunday, I should say, against the Dolphins. Any email you send that has a question about the Dolphins game leading up to it will not get answered on the next podcast. So if your question, if you anticipate your question being about the Dolphins game, obviously wait till after the game to send that. But email address at the bottom of the screen if you're watching on YouTube, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. So without further ado, let's get into the mailbag this week. Lighter mailbag this week just because there's no game to react to here. But let's start with my man Derwin out in Cyprus. How much goes into teams signing players to gain an advantage? Is that what the Nelson signing is, talking about Steven Nelson for the Chiefs, or are the Texans playing at a level where they would need it? Okay, I'm not sure. The wording of your question, Derwin, I'm not totally sure where you're going with this. But I think the general gist is, would the Chiefs be signing Steven Nelson because he's got some sort of intel for the Houston Texans and on D'Amico Ryans and the defense and whatnot? Teams do that all the time. In my opinion, signing guys that are on upcoming opponents just to pull intel. Now, the Chiefs, if you missed it, signed Steven Nelson to their practice squad this week. Steven Nelson had been retired, if you recall, had some not so flattering things to say about D'Amico Ryans over the summer, called him milk dud head, proceeded to engage with several people who took umbrage with that, reminded us how much money he's made in his career, and he doesn't need to play football again. Steven Nelson is back playing football, at least on the practice squad for the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know that the Chiefs have Steven Nelson in a room to try to figure out the Texans' defense. I tend to doubt it. They'll ask him questions about it, I'm sure. I think they're signing Steven Nelson because Steven Nelson can probably still play. I'm assuming they worked him out and he looks good and he's in good shape. I would take Steven Nelson on the Texans right now. I think the drop-off at cornerback after Derek Stingley Jr. and Kamari Lassiter is a big problem. So I would gladly take Steven Nelson as long as D'Amico Ryans, and I guess we should throw Nick Caserio in there. Steven Nelson made fun of Nick's vests last year and then proceeded to become a captain of the football team. So I don't know what the hell to make of it. But if they could let bygones be bygones, I would have taken Steven Nelson on this team. They could use him. He's better than whoever their third cornerback is right now. Steven Nelson is, and he would allow you to play. He could play on the outside. Kamari Lassiter could play in the slot. Not that Kamari's doing a bad job outside, but I think there's a lot of people that feel like he's more suited for that. Nevertheless, to answer your question, Derwin, teams do that, but I don't know how much they're doing that for the Chiefs or signing Nelson. I think they're signing him because he can still play. BK emails in, how was the Berg? Hopefully you and Amy got the quality time to not think about the Texans offensive line and Al Shire's suspension for a hot minute. We did not think much about the Texans O-line and Al Shire's suspension while we were there. I'll tell you what we did. We got there Friday night, went out to some of the bars in Market Square, stumbled upon a Bridgerton pop-up bar, like a speakeasy that was themed after the show Bridgerton. I've never watched it. My wife watched it though, and she said it's basically like softcore porn, with an old England setting. So a lot of people in the curly wigs and the long dresses and the girdles and things like that. And ultimately, those things all come off, and they wind up banging each other quite a bit. There wasn't nearly enough banging going on at this particular party, at this particular speakeasy. I was a little disappointed in that, But we had a good time. The drinks were very, very good. And then Saturday, we went to the Heinz History Center, where it's all like the history of Pittsburgh in like a 5-story museum. The first floor was all Heinz, like the company Heinz, like the ketchup and all the products, which was really interesting. The founder is an amazing entrepreneur. The second and third floors were the Sports Museum for Pittsburgh in Western Pennsylvania. That obviously was incredible. A lot of Steeler stuff there. And then the Mr. Rogers exhibit was on the fourth floor. I'm a child of that era of PBS, so that was cool. Penguins game Saturday night was amazing. We need hockey in Houston. I feel a little more strongly about that, having been to that Penguins game. It would be really cool to have that as an option on our sports scene here. And then the Steelers game on Sunday was amazing, as I outlined before. Got to see Jameis Winston throw two interceptions. I was sitting behind some of the wives and girlfriends of Browns players, so that was always interesting, seeing them react to Jameis throwing picks. I think they like Jameis okay. They wouldn't answer my questions about Deshaun. I think that answers that. So, but the Berg was great, BK. Thank you. Speaking of weird stuff with little drama, with a magic number of 2 to clinch the division, would you rather play? Who would you rather play at home in the playoffs between the Ravens, the Chargers, or the Broncos? I don't want anything to do with the Ravens. Okay, I know the defense isn't as good this year. I don't know that the Texans are equipped to take advantage of that. So I want nothing to do with the Ravens. I would say if the Chargers or Broncos, if we're getting them at home, I would say the Broncos would be my first choice. Rookie quarterback going up against D'Amico Ryan's defense at home. I think the crowd will be really live like it was for the Browns playoff game last year. So I would say Broncos and then Chargers. The Broncos and Chargers don't scare me. The Ravens scare me. And I think the Ravens, they get the bye week this week. They've got the same schedule the Texans do. And look, we're going to see the Texans play the Ravens in 2 weeks from today on Christmas Day. So I would say Broncos first, Chargers second, Ravens third. So appreciate that question, BK. Steven in Austin, I'm going to propose 2 scenarios and you pick one of them as more likely. Okay. Number 1, Texans come out of the bye week inspired. Bobby and D'Amico seem to have worked things out. The offense is crisp. The line's a little better. The run game is more consistent. Our playmakers are making plays. Defense looks inspired, standing up for Aziz. We beat the Dolphins handily. Then we win one of either the Chiefs or the Ravens, but both are competitive. We finish off the Titans the way we should. We finish 11-6. Okay, so I'm just picking which one's more likely, not which I'm preferring. Obviously, this sounds like a wonderful scenario. So an 11-6 finish. So they go 3-1 down the stretch, host a game, win the wild card. CJ looks like he's normal again. And when I say normal again, like playing like he did last year. And now we go on the road for the divisional round, and let's see what happens. Scenario number 2, we come out of the bye looking flat. Offense is the same. Pick a half. We only get 2 quarters of productions. Penalties call back a Nico touchdown. The other team's making big plays. We lose to Miami. It's ugly as ever. Lose to KC and Baltimore. Let's just say Indy can beat Denver and the rest, and now we're fighting for our playoff life against Tennessee. And the Titans get the last laugh, and we lose 23-20, and we miss the playoffs. Which is more likely? This is a long way of saying, which do I think is more likely to happen? They go 3-1 down the stretch. They look like they did last year. They get a playoff win, and we see where that goes. Or we lose out and potentially miss the playoffs. Which is more likely? It's a really good question, because I think the truth is going to be in between. I think they're going to go 1-3 or 2-2 and win the division, get a home game, and then I think probably lose in the second round. I'm confident they can win a home playoff game. I'm not confident they can win a road playoff game. Of the two, though, but you asked which is more likely. So the more likely is they go 3-1, win a playoff, good-looking team, could make noise, or lose out and miss the playoffs. I just have a hard time. I have a hard time feeling like this team's going to lose out. I think the Miami game is a very winnable game, especially if you get up on them early, choke them out. That's a soft team that does not do well against winning teams. I think that Titans game at the end of the year, if it means anything, is going to be an inspired effort by the Texans. And I don't think the Ravens and Chiefs are necessarily great versions of themselves. I just got done saying I'm frightened of the Ravens, and I am. And I'm scared of the Chiefs, too, because they're the Chiefs. But the fact of the matter is, these are both flawed versions of what compared to what they've been the last couple years. I have full confidence the Texans will play the Chiefs down to the last possession, because that's what the Chiefs do. They keep teams in games, and the Texans might even make a play or two and pull off a win. The Christmas game at home favors the Texans. I know they aren't favored in that game. The Ravens are a small favorite, but it's a short week. It's a holiday. You're the home team at the very least on this instead of the road team. And again, this is not as good an overall Ravens team as the one that beat the Texans twice last year. So I think it's way more likely. Not way more likely, because I don't think either scenario is all that likely, that they go 3-1 or that they go 0-4. I just don't see them going 0-4. So I'll take that one as the one that's less likely. I think it's more likely that they get their shit together and they cobble together a little run here late in the season. Maybe it's blind faith, whatever. We'll see. Joe Q, my man, is in. 2 quick takes here. He says, 4th-and-1. Last week on the mailbag, we discussed D'Amico punting on 4th-and-1 at the Texans 39 in the fourth quarter for a 3-and-out that began with Nico's drop. The next day, we watched Dan Campbell execute a simple strategy. We go for it on 4th-and-1 anywhere, anytime. unless it's the last play of the half or I can win the game with a chip shot field goal. I think there's a lot of evidence that that strategy is inspiring the fans and players and puts opponents on the back foot. What do you think of it? My feeling is always, Joe Q, like, what do I think makes my opponent most uncomfortable? What are they rooting for me to do right now? And I guarantee you that fourth and one against the Jags, that the Jags were praying that the Texans would, maybe not praying they wouldn't go for it, or they were praying that they wouldn't go for it. But I think they probably couldn't have felt great about stopping a fourth and inches right there. I think the Texans, I think if they'd gone for it, would have found a way to get that fourth and inches. Now, you know, granted, they failed on a third and one to get to fourth and one. So what do I know? I generally speaking like that strategy. I think for me, I'd have to be a really, really shitty team running the football. And I don't think the Texans are shitty running the football. I think Joe Mixon is great. And I think they've run the ball better of late. I would have gone for it there. I'm always about doing the thing that you think you guess your opponent is most uncomfortable with you doing. And I think the Jags would have been uncomfortable with the Texans going for it on fourth and one right there. Second take, resting starters. Here is a likely to be controversial take that is based on two assumptions. You come back from Pittsburgh still believing you would rather face the Steelers than the Ravens. And the second part is Texans win and Colts lose in week 15, clinching the division for the Texans. If both of those are true, I think the Texans should rest their starters on Christmas Day. Very interesting. NFL, Netflix, and rah-rah fans will hate it, but I think it makes the most sense. We have nothing objective to play for as we have zero chance to host a second-round playoff game. In addition, losing marginally increases chances we don't face the Ravens in the playoffs. Playing on 4 days rest is stupid in any situation. This is a fascinating scenario. A Texans team that clinched the division. Joe Q goes on to make several more really, really good points about this. For the sake of brevity, I'm just going to credit you, Joe Q, and say these are all great points. The overall question is, if the Texans have already clinched the division by the time that Christmas game rolls around, should they rest guys on that Christmas game? Should they take the guys that have been banged up and or the guys that are super valuable, i.e. CJ Stroud, who may also be banged up, and rest them or treat it like a preseason game, only play them half the game? It's fascinating because I think if the Texans clinch the division, I'm with you. They are, and I've been saying this for a month, they are so clearly to me the four seed in the AFC. I'm not saying they're the fourth best team. I'm saying they're the worst of the four division winners. And that's where you go. You go to the four seed if that's the case. So that's a fascinating question, is should you take some of your guys in the Joe Q lists a few guys in the unlikely event we beat the Ravens while sitting. Oh, you're saying if you beat them while sitting CJ, Mixon, Tunsil, Nico, Tank, Stingley, Schultz, Will, boy, you got your list. Danielle Hunter, Toa Toa made the list, huh? Jimmy Ward and Kalen Bullock, all the better. The Ravens will come back for the wild card round with little confidence. I see what you're saying. So if you happen to win the game, there's a lot going on with this question, you know, allowing the Ravens to win a game could help clear them out from having to face them in the wild card round. I think it's something that should be entertained, and I think it's something they won't do. I think they will play their guys. I think. And then you play, it's a great point. Then you play the starters in week 18 as a playoff tune-up, playing for a half. It really is a big luxury. Now that you lay it out that way, if you clinch the division before the Christmas game, man, that's a lot to think about. That's a really good one, Joe Q. Really, really good one. Let's get to a few more of these. Ben in the South. No France in the North in the mailbag this week. France, I hope you're okay. Ben in the South says, I'd like Nick to rework Al Shire's contract to replace the loss of money from the suspension as cold, hard fuck you to the league. To be fair, I believe that the hit was definitely penalty worthy, and I expected a one-game suspension. Three games is excessive. Yeah, it's too late to rework contracts. I know you're kind of joking, Ben in the South. But it is too late to rework contracts that way. And I get what you're saying. Like, rework it so that his game check is way less. Kind of like what the Browns did with Deshaun Watson when they knew he was going to have a suspension. They turned his whole, practically, other than $1 million, his whole salary in his first year with the Browns into a big signing bonus so that when he got suspended for 11 games for being a perv, that his game checks that he missed were minimal. I like the spirit there. Can't do it. As far as the expected suspension, totally with you on that. I expected a one-game suspension. I would have even accepted a one-game suspension. I think between the forearm to the head, Aziz's priors, and the scene that he made, I think those things all combined, one game felt like the right thing to me. Three games is excessive. I agree with that. But it is what it is now. It's going to be three games. The appeal did not work. So there is that. And I know from talking to some people who were involved in the appeal that all the arguments the Texans were making were bouncing off the NFL attorneys like bullets off of Superman's chest. Talked to some folks privately who were very intimately knowledgeable of the process to keep the suspension at three games. And there was great frustration and just bewilderment, because there was not a good explanation, they felt, that the NFL gave them. But onward and upward we go. Gus asks, thoughts on the college football playoff? I'm amped for it, but the bracket looks super weird with Boise State and Arizona State as the number three and number four seeds. I like a college football question. I'm enjoying this whole lead up to the playoffs. As far as the bracket goes, you know, Oregon 1, Georgia 2, Big Ten and SEC champs, the top four conference champs get a bye. Those look right. You know, those are Oregon and Georgia are awesome teams. And I think I got no problem with them being seeded 1 and 2. Boise State at 3, Arizona State at 4. It's fascinating that the ACC champ is stuck at seed number 12. They didn't get a seat at the four-team bye table. That is something I think they might change next year. You look at the bracket, and the fact that they raised the floor so high for these four conference champs, you're left with a bracket that's kind of inequitable. You know, the 5 and 6 seeds, Texas and Penn State, are really in great spots right now, if you think about it. The next, and obviously those are the next two best seeds to not get a bye. But you think about this, Texas just needs to beat 12th-seeded Clemson, who is very fortunate to even be in this thing. And then they would feed into 5, would play 4, so Arizona State. I mean, Texas's wins over Clemson and Arizona State for making the Final Four. The 6th-seed, Penn State, is a win over SMU and Boise State. Two teams that weren't even Power 4 teams a year ago. Boise still isn't, but SMU's in the ACC. Penn State, if James Franklin doesn't beat SMU at home and then Boise on a neutral to get to the Final Four, that heat is going to be smoky hot on his butt, on James Franklin. So those are two paths from the 5 and 6 that are very manageable, because the 3 and 4 seeds are the Mountain West champ and the Big 12 champ. Teams that are barely top 12 teams, honestly. Boise and Arizona State. I know Boise's got Ashton Gentry, really good player. I love Dillingham, the coach at ASU. They're not even close to the 3rd or 4 best teams in the country. So what happens is two things. So we illustrated how the 5 and the 6 seeds have fairly easy paths to the Final Four. The next seed down is Notre Dame. They play Indiana at home, which I think is going to be a tough game, but it's at home. Then they go to Georgia, or they go to the Sugar Bowl to play Georgia. Nobody's crying any tears for Notre Dame. And when you're an independent, this is, you throw yourself to the whims of the committee. I just think that, and my guess is they're not going to change it after 1 year. They'll let it play out again. But Oregon is the number one seed, and their first game they play in the quarterfinals is against the winner of Ohio State and Tennessee. Like, that's crazy for a quarterfinal game. So, and the reason that Ohio State and Tennessee are sitting at 8 and 9 is because teams like Boise State and ASU are seated ahead of them right now. You know, like, it's so anyways, They would have been a couple seats higher. I think what it should be is I think the top five conference champions should all be automatically in the field of 12, but don't give them a bye. You know, don't give them a bye in the first round automatically, you know. But other than that, I'm super excited for it, man. And I'm not complaining about Notre Dame's draw. And for those who are new to the podcast, that's where I went to school. Back when the stadium was only 59,000 seats, not 80,000 seats. That's how old I am. I'm a total late 90s stadium remodel, old, years old, and then some. But it's going to be fun as hell, man. These home field first round playoff games are going to be off the chain. Three of them are going to have bad weather probably, or at least cold weather. So that should add to the theater of the whole thing. And then New Year's Eve and New Year's Day to have four bowl games all with a playoff atmosphere. It's going to be awesome, man. It's going to be really cool. And I didn't think I would feel this way about it. I was a big 14 playoff guy, but this is kind of fun. My one suggestion to the playoff committee would be, don't allow people to send out video of the selection committee watch room on the days of all the conference title games. It's basically 12 old people, men and women, sitting in recliners with no beverages, no notebooks, no laptops, no cigars. No, like, pick one or the other. Like, you either be super judicious taking notes about these games, even if you're faking it, or just have a big fucking party, and that'll make you more likely to pick the bracket that really true football fans are going to like. One or the other. But just to be sitting there just staring at the screen, half of you looking like you're about to fall asleep, and the other half looking like you want to flip over to Law and Order. Bad look, man. What are you doing, Ward Manuel? You're supposed to be running this show, clown. All right, last question. This is from Sean. Not me, Sean, but this is a question that I posed to Seth on the show, I think. Would you rather have, for the Texans, on these three games coming up, would you rather have two close wins and then a blowout loss? So I'm assuming the blowout loss would be to the Ravens. So would you rather have two close wins, say a field goal win against the Dolphins this Sunday, field goal win against the Chiefs in Kansas City, and then get blown out by the Ravens? Keep in mind, that would clinch the division. Two wins, you're there. All you need is two wins or two losses from the Colts or one of each, and you clinch the division. So would you rather have two close wins and a blowout loss, or two close losses and then a blowout win of the Ravens? This is going to sound weird, because empirically, at its very basic crux, this question is, you'd rather be 2-1 or 1-2? Of course, the logical answer would be, I'd rather be 2-1. However, are you feeling more confident in a Texans team after the Ravens game that wins a couple close ones, which they do all the time, and then gets blown out at home by the Ravens? Or would you feel more confident in a team that lost by a field goal late to the Dolphins and the Chiefs and then took the Ravens to the woodshed? And I know it's only one win, so you'd need the Colts. You'd either need to beat Tennessee or you'd need the Colts to lose a game along the way, which I think is going to happen. I think the Colts lose to the Broncos this weekend. I think I'd rather have the latter. I think I'd rather have the two close losses and the blowout win. If we're conceding that we're going to be the four seed and there's no moving out of that, That's where they're going to be. They're going to be the four seed, the Texans. Whether they get there going 9-8 or 11-6, that is where they're going to be. I think I'd rather be headed down the stretch with, hey, we played a couple close ones, could have gone either way. And then you blew out the Ravens, your arch nemesis from last year that blew you out twice. Give me 1-2 with the two close losses and the Ravens blowout. That's a fun question. I'm feeling more confident in a 9-7 Texans team that just blew out the Ravens than I am in a 10-6 Texans team that got their heads handed to them by the Ravens again. Aren't you feeling better about the potential of the second version, the 9-7 version, making some noise in the postseason? Isn't that all that matters once you're kind of settled in at that four seed? It's all that matters. It's a good question. All right, that's the mailbag for this week, everybody. If you want to email me, houmailbag@gmail.com. If you want to subscribe, rate, and review, you can do that as well. Hit that subscribe button. Tell a friend about the Utopia Football Podcast. Big thanks to Anthony Irwin, my producer, for getting the podcast out to all of you. Big thanks to all of you for listening. Very Merry Christmas. I got my Macho Man Randy Savage cream of the crop ugly Christmas sweater on with the trees in the background here, and I'll be doing that all again in a couple of days previewing the Dolphins game. So appreciate all of you riding along, and until then, have a great week. We'll see you next time on the Utopia Football.